All right, I'm going to call this meeting to order. It is February 17th, and this is the House Judiciary Committee. So I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2333.
Let's see. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, House Bill 2333 came to us at the request of the House Interim Committee on Judiciary for the Oregon State Bar's Procedure and Practice Committee. So just to refresh everybody's memory, we previously had a public hearing on this bill on February 4th. At that time, we didn't have the paperwork back. So there is no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement issued.
Excellent. I will take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2333 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2333 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? All right, there we go. I'm going to close that work session, and I'm going to open a public hearing.
Who are you going to have carry it?
Oh, yeah. Who's going to carry it? Who wants to carry it? Andy Olson. You're it. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2332.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Madam Speaker, I just got a raise.
So Chair Williamson, members of the committee, House Bill 2332 comes to us at the request of the House Interim Committee on Judiciary for Oregon State Bar's Family Law Section. We have no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued. We don't have any amendments before us today. So to tell you about the bill, under current Oregon law, the only means of determining whether a modification of spousal support is warranted due to a substantial change in economic circumstances is to actually file a modification action. So House Bill 2332 allows a party to request once every 2 years certain documents in writing without filing a request for modification of the judgment if a judgment of marital annulment, dissolution, or separation includes an award of spousal support for which any portion of the obligation remains outstanding. Documents that may be requested include, number one, the first and second pages of the most recently filed state and federal tax returns, or, number two, if no income tax return was filed in the last calendar year, all W-2 statements, year-end payroll statements, interest and dividend statements, as well as all other records of income earned or received during the last calendar year. The bill allows the responding party to redact all account numbers, personal identification, and contact information. The bill mandates that the responding party comply unless the requesting party does not simultaneously provide the same documents.
Thank you. Ryan Cardy. Don't forget to state your name for the record.
Thank you, Vice Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Cardy. I am an attorney in private practice here in Salem. My practice is limited exclusively to matters involving family law. I serve as the legislative liaison for the Oregon State Bar's Family Law Section, and I am the co-chair of the section's legislative subcommittee. I appear before you today in my capacity on behalf of the Oregon State Bar and in support of House Bill 2332. I think the overview of the bill was right on, and so instead of starting there, I'll ask you to indulge me for a moment and turn back the clock with me, if you would, to the 2013 session. And for the members on this committee who were on this committee in that session, you'll recall that House Bill 2559 was a bill presented to this committee in that session that dealt with spousal support reform. That bill had a number of reforms. It was very hotly contested by both sides, and there was a lot of testimony. This committee tasked the Oregon State Bar with coming back in this session and presenting some common sense reforms in the area of spousal support that would be positive for Oregonians. In response, the Oregon State Bar's Family Law Section took up that charge, and during the intervening 2 years, met with various interest groups, met with various interested parties, and came back with the legislation you see proposed before you in 2332. As you heard in the summary of the bill, this is an avenue for self-represented litigants to come back without having to seek the assistance of legal counsel, without having to come back and file an action in court to see simply if circumstances have changed to the point that a modification would be appropriate. The idea being, if circumstances haven't changed, theoretically, no one's going to file. If circumstances have changed, then perhaps they will file, but at least the cases that are coming to the court will be based on reality versus what happens now, which is this. If I think that the other side has an increase in income, but I don't know, I don't have any reasonable way to know because we don't communicate, I have to file a modification proceeding in order to get the documents that will tell me if the modification proceeding was appropriate in the first place. What that means is that the process is backwards right now. You should know before you file whether it's appropriate. And I'll compare this momentarily to the dynamic that is set up for child support. In the state of Oregon, there are two ways to get a child support modification or to request one. One, in the same manner as spousal support, the requesting party can demonstrate to the court there's been a substantial change of economic circumstances. Or two, either party, once every 34 months, can go to the district attorney's office in that party's local county and say, I would like a modification. And the district attorney's office, at no charge to a party, will pull the income information off of the state database, will do a quick calculation, and then will provide an updated calculation. The calculation may not be different, but what that does is that provides parties a non-litigious, out-of-court method to make sure that the support amounts they're either paying or receiving are appropriate. So the family law section is asking you to initiate a similar mechanism in the realm of spousal support so that Oregonians have a low, in fact, no cost method to assess whether the support amounts they pay or receive are appropriate and whether court actions are appropriate or not. On behalf of the family law section, I ask that you move House Bill 2332 forward, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Thank you. I will close this public hearing, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2332.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2332 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2332 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? All right. Who wants to carry that? Anyone?
I think Representative Barton would be excellent choice in picking that one up. I
mean. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to. On the other hand, you know, Representative Post is had a real interest in this issue, I recall.
I had 3 days in a row.
We're going to spend more time talking about carriers than we are about the bills.
I will be glad to do it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Post.
God bless you.
With that, I will close the work session, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2430.
So Chair Williamson, members of the committee, House Bill 2430 comes to us from the Office of the Governor for Oregon State Police. We have an indeterminate revenue and fiscal on this bill. We have no amendments. Under current Oregon law, the general fund of the state treasury includes a state police account where all monies received by the Department of State Police must be paid. House Bill 2430 clarifies that the OSP may accept and distribute gifts, grants, donations and funds from any source, including services and property, to carry out department duties. Similarly, current law authorizes the state fire marshal to accept gifts or grants of service or property. House Bill 2430 makes it clear that the state fire marshal may also distribute such gifts, which may include donations and funds from any source, to carry out the duties of the state fire marshal.
Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Nealon.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Colin Nealand. I am the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of State Police, and I'm here today to speak to you about House Bill 2430, which was submitted as a legislative concept by the department as a cleanup measure in current language. And so obviously I'm here in support of this measure and to answer any questions that you have today. To give you a brief history of why you have this bill in front of you today, House Bill 2430 was put forward as a legislative concept by the department to clean up the current language in ORS 181, which is specific to the Oregon State Police, and then ORS 476, which is specific to the State Fire Marshal. And I'm not going to go through in detail the written testimony that I've submitted previously that you should have in front of you today, but I would like to speak with you just generally about why you have this bill in front of you today. So I have worked for the department for over 10 years, and in that time we have received federal grant funds that we have passed through to local governments throughout that entire time, and that has been budgeted in the department's legislatively adopted budgets for the past 10 years and longer. As we were working in the last year or so, a couple of years, on a grant agreement to pass through to a local government, specifically between our State Fire Marshal Division to the local government, it came to our attention that the current language we have in statute doesn't align very well with what was the intent implied by our legislatively adopted budget, where it was assumed that we would be passing through grant funds to local governments and other entities. And so really what you have in here today is really just a matter to kind of clean that up and clarify and codify the language that's in statute, so that it's very clear that we have the authority to really do what's been implied in our budget for a long time, which is to both receive grant funds or really funds from any source, although that really we're trying to address the issue we came across right away, which is passing through grant funds to locals, and then be able to not only receive those funds, but then also pass those through as well. And so I appreciate the time that you've granted me today to speak to you, and I'll answer any questions that you have at this time.
Representative Greenlick.
Do you have to have grant funds approved by Ways and Means before you submit the grants?
So Chair Williamson, Chair Olson, Representative Greenlick, yes, we do. And so we go through that process to have them approved before we receive those funds.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? With that, I will close the public hearing, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2430.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2430 to the House floor with the do-pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2430 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections?
I guess I should have asked the question,
yes.
Madam Chair. I do have some concerns about the gratuity part of it. I mean, for cakes and pies and donuts being dropped off at, you know, the patrol offices, that type of thing.
Donuts?
Yeah. So I just... Just a thought.
Thank you. That was good discussion.
Thank you.
All right. So
visual level of dialogue in the Judiciary Committee.
Any objections? So moved.
I'll carry it.
Mitch? Representative Greenlick will carry it. All right. I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2431. We do not have anyone signed up. Come on up. Yes. Come on up. Yes.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, House Bill 2431 also comes to us from the governor's office for Oregon State Police. We have no revenue or fiscal impact on this bill and no amendments before us today. So currently, the United States Army standards are used to evaluate the physical fitness of Department of State Police candidates. The test has been used for decades and is accordingly considered outdated. House Bill 2431 allows OSP to create its own physical examination standards, which in turn allows them to adopt a standard that is potentially more relevant and up to date. House Bill 2431 only applies to physical examinations administered on or after the effective date.
Good afternoon. Vice Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, apologize for not getting signed up, but I'm here today just to briefly talk to you about what
your name for the
I'm
record.
Sorry.
No, thank you.
Patrick Ashmore, I'm Deputy Superintendent for the State Police. I just briefly want to talk to you why we think it's a good idea to go away from the Army's standard test. Currently, we're mandated. It's for our entry-level recruit testing before they become troopers. They have to pass that test along with a written test and a psychological test. It's become problematic for the agency, as we have found in the last, well, we kept track the last 2.5 years, 1,432 participants that have attempted to pass the test, the physical test. Out of those, 657 have failed, which is a 45% failure rate. We're not hiring soldiers. We're hiring civilian police officers. I myself was in the military. I have no qualms about the military. In fact, many of our applicants are either currently military applying once they depart the military or our National Guard. If amended, we'd be able to have the flexibility to choose one of several physical agility tests that are out there. One example is the Oregon ORPAT, which is DPPST's current test that they use. That's really it. To me, it's physical fitness is very important. I don't think it's going to be lessening our standards. I believe that what I have read on the other tests that are out there, it's more of a cumulative testing. So if you don't pass your push-ups, say you can go and maybe do better on your sit-ups or on your run. So it gives our applicants more of an opportunity. The other thing I would say is that I've seen Division I athletes that have not been able to pass this test, which, like I say, I like to think I'm in pretty good physical shape, but when you have athletes of that caliber that can't pass our test, there's something wrong with that.
Thank you.
Question?
Yes.
I knew your father, now that I recognize who you are.
Yes, sir.
Could you explain to the committee how Representative Olson could have possibly passed the test?
Those were going to be my questions.
That was going to be
that
my question.
We're all thinking it. Thank you, Representative, for asking it.
Thank you. It can't be that
good. Though, seriously, though, 45% can't pass it?
Co-chairs and Representative Krieger, that's the numbers. And I've gone out. A lot of it is, you know, the way we've administered the test, we've been very, very strict. So if you're doing a push-up and you come an inch short, you don't go all the way down, as an example, they don't count that. So you get these folks that are really strong, but they come in and they're not able to pass the test. And, you know, we always tell them to make sure you can do more push-ups, more sit-ups, run faster than the minimum standard. But it's incredible the amount of people that come that you would think would easily be able to pass the test, and they're unable to do so.
Representative Post.
What are we calling Chair Williamson? Thank you. I want to make sure I get that right. Madam Chair, thank you. Okay, this is actually a question for the two gentlemen that have. You've been through this, I take it. Would that be correct, both Representative Krieger and Olson? The standard here now?
That didn't exist when I came on.
It didn't. Okay. No. Because that was, I wanted to use that to help me understand. So
it's been so long ago for me, over 50 years. I don't remember that far back.
No comments. Okay. Okay. So again, I'm going to rely on your expertise as well as yours. Where do you stand? How do you feel about this? Is it? Are we lessening? Are we strengthening? Are we?
No, actually, they do need some flexibility because you do have that problem. I've seen it with numerous candidates over the years. I mean, even when I was still with the agency, where you would exactly like what Deputy Superintendent suggesting, right, and describing, where you would have, men and women that would come in you thought were in top physical condition, and they would miss the push-ups by a couple and because you couldn't count them accurately. Or sit-ups even, and it was a tragedy to see that happen because, you know, you have these standards and this is the way it is, and you're losing, you know, some great people.
Okay, so in a follow-up,
yes,
would
absolutely.
Be so. How long has this U.S. Army standard been used then, or in use?
Vice Chairs and Representative Post. I am not sure. I went back, and I would have shook my head yes that we all did take that test way back. I don't know how far back this goes, but yeah. I would say more than 20 years. Well, actually, I've been on the agency for 27 years, and I took this test, so I can account for the last 27 years.
Yes. Yeah. Or what? Are you? I can see the wheels turning.
I know. The wheels are turning. They really are. I'm just, I always have a hard time with, it's just me in general. I don't like change. I'm very terrible about change. I sit in the same place every day. I do everything. But anyway, the point is, I guess nobody wants to see a 45% no pass, in essence, but is that a bad thing?
Vice chairs and Representative Post, it's not. And I looked at this myself. Like I said, physical fitness for me is very important. I think we need to look good in uniform. We need to be able to take care of ourselves when we're out on the road, especially our young troopers. But I do believe after watching the tests, the way we administer the tests, I think with the flexibility of going to another test, and I use DPPST as an example, I don't think we're lessening our standards. We're actually, again, trying to make it a cumulative test. So if somebody's strong, there are some people that are really strong core, some people that maybe aren't as strong in their push-ups, some people that are better runners. And the other thing about this test or the Army standard test, once you fail, if you don't do your push-ups, you're done. You're asked to leave. And so with the tests that are out there, I say out there, the industry standard tests, you're given an opportunity to come back that day and retest. So there's just a lot of stringent guidelines that have really affected us negatively over the course of many years.
Okay. And if I could add something, I think OSP is the only agency that uses this test.
Representative Wilson, right. you're correct. Yes.
So none of our other law enforcement agencies are using this test.
Yeah, I was wondering how this relates to the police standards and training, whatever.
DPSST.
Say it again.
DPSST.
That's the one. How does it relate to what?
Vice chairs.
The director is in the audience.
It seemed to me that would be a relevant state test.
Vice chairs and
gonna go there. So
we're gonna get more answer than we wanted.
You are, and we're gonna see it next week.
You get to shoot a gun, Representative.
Not next week.
Thank you, co-chairs. Representative Grelick, for the record, my name is Eric Skalbix. I'm the director of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, also known as DPSST. We look
director,
forward to...
Can you tell us what you do at DPSST, because we have some new members?
Sure. Our agency is responsible by legislative action to set the standards for 41,000 people in the state of Oregon to work in public safety. That includes city, county, state, tribal law enforcement officers, city, county, state corrections officers, county and state parole and probation officers, 911 operators, career and volunteer firefighters, private investigators, private security officers, and polygraph examiners. So out of the whole discussion of who we serve, we set standards for the law enforcement professionals in the state of Oregon. One of those standards that we adopted ties into this discussion you're having with the deputy superintendent affects our basic law enforcement training program. City, county, state officers come to DPSST for 16 weeks of basic training. I know that some of you have come on campus. We're hosting a session for you in a few weeks, and you'll get a chance to see it if you haven't. But one of the things that we identified about a decade ago was using the standard that the military uses no longer served our purpose law enforcement. It's not a criticism of the military. It's not a criticism of the Army. But what we couldn't tie is how many sit-ups, push-ups, and how fast you could run made you a better law enforcement officer. As a result of that, we sent our staff looking across the country for what else was out there that truly was job relevant. We sent our health and fitness trainer up to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police Academy in Calgary, Alberta. They created a program called POPAT, Peace Officer Physical Ability Test. It is based on tasks that a police officer working in the street would have to accomplish. Climbing over an obstacle, running up stairs, crossing a board to go across a creek, going over a fence, engaging at the end of a run with what we call a push-pull machine, where there's actually resistance put on that, which would simulate now chasing a suspect, arresting them, so having a scuffle, and then handcuffing them, and then pulling a mannequin, as in a person away from a burning car. So it's all job related, it's all validated to the discipline, and it's legally defensible by our staff with Department of Justice to say we don't have disparate impact against age or against gender. So we adopted that as a standard for academy graduation. We're not able to adopt that as an employment standard because we're not the employer at DPSST, where state police is. A lot of the agencies cities across the state have adopted that standard as their testing standard to get people in. So again, it's not a criticism of the military model, but years ago we left that about a decade ago because we just couldn't tie it to job relevance and what officers were encountering. So I hope that gives you a little bit of context and part of what the change is about. Vice Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Olson, Representative Greenlick, we do see a failure rate, but at the academy, with the standard adopted by the board, since it's an academy graduation standard, they have three opportunities in 16 weeks to pass that course. So what we run into, and it's a great question, we may see a person, and keep in mind, the agencies hire them and send to us, and it's every size and shape of person in every age. I will share with you that we just had the oldest graduate finish the 16-week basic police course at the age of 72 years old, and that is a sheriff of Klamath County. He was elected by his constituency to be the sheriff. He has been out of law enforcement for more than 20 years. He had to come back to basic training. He passed ORPAT. He was not at the end of his class. He actually finished faster than some other people at the age of 72. So what we do is with our health and fitness staff, in the first morning, if they don't pass, they know what their benchmark is. We'll work with them on core strength and identify how to work through the obstacles. And it's really not about how strong you are. It's about how you apply your physical ability to get through the obstacles. So it's just as important to think about it as it is the physical force. So we work with those folks, and we do see some failures, but maybe one or two per class, and usually we don't see any failures at the back end. So we see people ready to come. And the other thing in working with Department of Justice, everything on that test is up front. It's on our webpage. Applicants coming to the academy know what they're gonna have to do. They don't have to have these tools to do the test. They can go to their local high school, run up and down the stairs, do the different obstacles and get in shape. So everything is wide open as far as what the test is, because we want people to be ready to come to work and be trained.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I'm really clear again. So really what we'll do then is bring the state police in line with all other police agencies in Oregon as far as this certification.
Vice Chairs and Representative Pose, that's what we're trying to do. We haven't actually decided yet which of the tests we want to still explore that, but I use that example, ORPAT, as one that's being used now.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? All right, then I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2431, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2431.
So, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2431 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2431 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? We need a carrier.
Representative Krieger.
Representative Krieger, but only if you talk about your test and do some push-ups.
Could.
Madam Chair, I would move to suspend the rules and to allow Representative Springer to vote in block on House Bill 2333, House Bill 2332, and House Bill 2430.
Representative Olson moves that the rules be suspended so Representative Springer can vote in block House Bill 2333, House Bill 2332, and House Bill 2430. Are there any objections? I don't know if I need to do that or not.
I vote yes three times.
Excellent. And with that, is there any other business of the committee? All right, we're adjourned. We're adjourned. Business of the committee? All right.